Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and today is Tuesday, October 13th, 2015. Wow, we've got some great dudes today, including author and brewer Christian Benedetti, and some brewers from Portland, Oregon, including The Commons, Gigantic, and Occidental. Welcome, guys. All right, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for saying Oregon right.
Oregon. And Beer Sessions Radio is brought to you by Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. If you have questions for our guests today, you can tweet us at @beer_sessions. All right, so let's go around the table and everyone introduce themselves. So this is the Portland, Oregon show. Thanks to Christian Benedetti. So Christian, this is so cool, man. You were in New York for a long time. You wrote your book about the ale trails, which I still love. And now you're back with another book and with your co-writer, Andrea.
Yes. Yeah, here we are. We're really psyched. Today is the day the book came out, actually, so... this book started as a project when Andrea came to me after an event when I was debating a guy about beer versus wine with cheese, and I was wearing a like Mexican wrestling outfit, and Andrea was suitably impressed by the performance, I guess. But they came up and said, you know, you guys want to work on a book, you know? So we put together the concept for Beer Bites and started cooking. And Andrea's an incredible chef. And so she was developing recipes. I was pairing beers, and we worked on it last year for about 6 months.
That's great. Welcome to the show, Andrea.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about the book a little bit, but gentlemen, also introduce yourselves and say the names of your brewery.
Well, I'm Dan Engler. I'm one of the owners and brewmaster, I guess, at Occidental Brewing in Portland. Been around for about 4.5 years, and we do predominantly German-style beers, although we throw a Belgian in there once in a while. Our joke is that we make beer-flavored beer. So.
That's a good one. Yeah, well, we just got some of your beers. I know you guys, part of this whole thing, you're at the Nomad tonight, the launch of your book, Beer Bites, and tomorrow you'll be at Jimmy's Number 43. And I know from you guys, Dan, Occidental, we've got a keg of your Kolsch, a keg of your Dunkelweizen, and a keg of your Keller beer.
Yep.
So that's going to be really great here tomorrow night. And then, Mike, how are you, buddy? Good to see you back on the show, man.
Nice to see you too, Jimmy.
All right.
So, yeah, my name's Mike Wright. I'm the founder of the Commons Brewery, also in Portland, Oregon. And we're a small, sort of European-inspired, Belgian, French, German-inspired beers. Another way to summarize it is we focus on yeast-forward beers.
All right, and you said you're not only just your European brewery styles with Northwestern ingredients.
Whenever possible, yeah.
And for you tomorrow,
you really cleared that up, didn't you?
You guys brought the Urban Farmhouse, the Gather Around beer, and the Genuine Lime Myrtle.
Ginger Lime Myrtle.
Ginger Lime Myrtle.
Yeah, Urban Farmhouse. And Gather Around beer is more of a tagline we use, so there's something else in there. It's probably Madrone. Madrone, which is, for us, a relatively hop-forward beer. We're very reserved in our use of hops.
So we met
Dan likes to tease us about hop contracts.
Sean likes to tease himself. The brewer, Sean, is always like, it's like, we think that, you know, about, I don't know, somewhere in a third of a pound a barrel. That's kind of like the magic number at the Commons, you know. It's funny.
And this guy, Van.
Yeah, I'm Van Havig with Gigantic Brewing Company, also located in beautiful Portland, Oregon. What do? We make IPA, shockingly enough. I can't believe these guys have brewing licenses in Oregon, because you're actually required by the state to make IPA. Mm-hmm. We've managed to get around that law. But we make, honestly, what we do is we make IPA all the time, and Imperial IPA, and everything else we do is seasonal limited release. So we make a bunch of different beers. We really don't give a crap about style or anything. We just sort of think of what we want to make and just do it.
You know? Right. We've had some of your beers. I know that Mike, we met you about a year and a half ago. So you're here, Christian, for this with Travel Portland, right?
That's yes. Yeah, like we are
promotional event.
We're super grateful. They brought us all out here. Beer is a big part of the Portland scene, obviously, and Travel Portland just, you know, saw, you know, their fall campaign is all about beer. So they approached us and said, you know, can we do something with your book? And we said that would be absolutely incredible. And then it kind of went from there and turned into a fantasy book tour for us. So they said, why don't you invite three of your favorite brewers from Portland? And, you know, we'll take the entourage out. So everyone got
so
in.
So the first all. Three, like, couldn't come.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I wasn't going to tell you guys. But,
well, Mike, no, we met you about a year and a half ago the last time they did Travel Portland. You were here at the Commons and the Urban... The HUB, the hub?
Or yeah,
urban,
that's right. Yeah,
or
yeah.
Hopworks.
Yeah. Yep, Hopworks. The Commons. I'm forgetting somebody else that was here. But
Breakside.
Thank you. Yeah, we were here last year for another Travel Portland event, and we were lucky enough to have the opportunity to come out again and join Christian and Andrea for their book release and then support you tomorrow.
Yeah, last time you came out, we got some of your bottles.
Yep,
which went over well. The Urban Farmhouse and the Madrone, and I know we've also had some Gigantic here, and from you guys. What does it take? I mean, before we get into talking about Portland and the book, for you guys coming to New York City and selling beer in New York, you know, what is the process of doing that? You know, is it worth it for you guys?
You call up 12% and you say, "Hey, you want to take beer?" And they say, "Yes." It's pretty much what happens.
Yeah,
it's true. It's true.
We the Commons sends a very limited amount of beer out here, and that's just because we're such a small brewery. But 12% is happy to take it and sprinkle it around town, in places like yours, which is it's great.
Yeah, we're not big either. I mean, we're not sending a shit ton of beer out here to New York. I mean, it's really for us the attraction in New York is sort of funny. It's the fact that we work with a whole lot of artists for our various beer labels. And there is some value to the artist in having your beer in New York City, because to them it's art on the shelves in New York City, right? And it gives us, we're hoping long term, it gives us a little access to the New York art market, because we're mainly like West Coast art market right now in Japan. So, and it's kind of a funny thing for us. We're sort of like, yeah, we're selling beer here, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fun.
And for you guys, tomorrow night we have Gigantic Brain Damage, The Rise of Simcoe, and Pipe Wrench.
Yes, actually, it's Sod Busted 3, The Rise of the Simcoe, which is...
Sod Busted Farms?
Yeah, Sod Busted Farms. So we're very close with a particular hop griller in Oregon. And so that beer, the Sod Busted 3, The Rise of the Simcoe, for everyone out there, it's a real, honest-to-God, true-to-God, real, fresh hop beer. Hops came out of the field, and 2 hours later were in the kettle. So that's something that we get to do, which is a lot of fun, and we have access for fresh Simcoe and things like that. Yeah, the other beers, what else do we have? Oh, we have Pipe Wrench, right?
Pipe Wrench.
Mm-hmm. Pipe Wrench, which is gin barrel-aged IPA. There aren't a lot of gins aged in wood, but there happens to be one in Oregon, and we have access to those barrels. It's a pretty fun beer. And Brain Damage is like some ridiculous quad aged in Pinot and bourbon barrels for 2 years. It's a ridiculous thing, you know.
You guys are proud of yourself.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just make beer, man.
Well, Chris, tell us about these guys, because we know you're, you know, we loved your Ale Trails book, and, you know, you've been out in Portland for a few years. Yeah. So what's it like visiting these guys' breweries and the beer they're making?
The Portland scene is incredible. There's so many people doing great work and great beer. It just keeps growing. You know, I'm from Portland, so when I moved away to New York in 2001, in September, 2 days before 9/11, actually, there were about, I don't know, 20 breweries in Portland, maybe 25. Now there's 90, I think. And
is
you know,
it,
it just keeps
growing.
I think
in Portland.
Yeah,
proper.
In the Portland. Yeah, in yeah. the. You know, so it just keeps going. We have a beer culture there that is incredible, you know, so it's fun to be a part of that. And everyone helps each other out. We have tons of cool events, and, you know, it just keeps growing and evolving. So that is the cool thing to see, the progression, and everyone's just really supportive of each other. It's, you know, it's a great industry like that. I think that's true nationally, but Portland has so much going for it. You'd think at some point it might, you know, kind of get weird. It just hasn't. It just keeps getting better. So.
Yeah, no, it really is the case that all from the smallest to the largest breweries, everyone has a good relationship. You know, the largest breweries in town, you can walk into the largest breweries in town and say something like, "Hey, can I give this beer to your lab just to see, I don't know, what the actual alcohol content is or how many IBUs or something?" They'll be like, "Yeah, sure, no problem. I'll just tell you, I'll call you in a day or two." Okay. You know, everyone's willing to help each other out.
So let's talk about your brewery. So let's talk. So Dan from Occidental, why don't you guys tell me about Occidental? Because you have such a tight community. And then we can talk about Andrew, what dish from your book you would pair with some of his beers. So who wants to start? Tell me about Occidental, Christian.
Well, okay, Occidental, if I may be so bold.
Please.
Well, one of the reasons that we wanted to feature them in the book and on this tour is that they're one of the few breweries in the whole Portland area that totally focus so far on a lot of German styles. You know, it's a very hop-heavy town, a lot of crazy stuff going on, sour beers, a lot of beers with insane flavors, which is a good thing. But I really appreciate Dan's beer because it's, you know, clean, classic renditions of great old styles like Hefeweizen, Alt Beer, Schwartz. You guys have a Schwartz beer?
No, I don't. We have done Schwartz beer.
Yeah. So, you know, excellent beers in St. John's, which is a cool neighborhood.
It's way up in North Portland. It's kind of in a corner of Portland. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, beautiful bridge by it. It's just a really cool thing. So, big fan of the beer, so it was great that we could get them to come along.
My favorite thing about Occidental was talking to Dan one time about, there's a few of us sitting around talking about naming beers, and Dan was like, yeah, it's really hard for us to name beers. Like, we made a Kolsch, so we named it Kolsch. And then and our Hefeweizen, we really batted that one around for a while, and then we came up with Hefeweizen. Which rules.
At least we know what it is.
Yeah. I'll add, too, that Occidental, and like the Commons, has been super stubborn up at least until this point, and for the foreseeable future, and have not yet made an IPA. Which also suggests probably that, in financial terms, we're just ignorant or something. We don't get the revenue stream that the IPA creates. Yeah. We can't comprehend that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of bold of you, but we're seeing, like, we're drinking right now a New York City made beer, Folks beer, and he's doing similar to what you are. He's not doing IPAs; he's doing German styles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a good niche for us. I mean, when we were first planning the brewery, we weren't sure that that's what we were going to do, but we decided to give it a try and see what would happen. And there were a few people that were like, "Yeah, good luck with that."
Assholes.
But
yeah,
but it's worked out. Yeah, it's a good niche. I mean, I don't want to say that there's like necessarily backlash against the kind of Northwest hoppy beers, but there's definitely room for something else, you know, and that has
the way I'll put it is, 10 years ago in Portland, everyone thought we had this really amazing beer scene. But what I really thought it was that we had a scene with a lot of depth, but almost no breadth. I mean, if you looked at almost everything that was being made in 2005 in Portland, everything was sort of hop based Northwest kind of beers, and there was like no breath. I mean, I had been brewing on the East Coast for a little bit, and I would tell people all the time, I'd be like, fuck, man, Baltimore has like a better breadth of brewing scene than Portland does. Oh, bullshit, blah, blah. But it was totally true. You know, and when guys like, you know, Mike and Dan came around, you know, 5 years ago or whatever, and started making other stuff, Portland honestly finally has the breadth. You know, it's still a hop dominated market, but I think that's always going to be the case. I mean, it's going to be the case in the United States.
Andrew, what dishes from your book would you serve with Occidental?
Sure. So we kind of divided the book based on the flavor profiles that you find in beer rather than styles. So the first chapter is all about light, crisp, and clean beers, and a lot of Dan's beers from Occidental fall into that category. So one of the dishes that we really like with his Hefeweizen is a sweet corn griddle cake. And that's just fresh corn chucked off the ear and mixed with Parmesan cheese and some herbs and fried in a cast iron skillet. And the flavor of corn goes really well with Hefeweizen. So that's one of the pairings. Also, the Kolsch goes awesome with lobster rolls. Just the buttery crust and like the refreshing flavor of the beer is a great pairing.
Are you serving some of these dishes at the Nomad tonight?
Yeah, we're serving the lobster rolls. And then we also are serving pretzels. My first book was about pretzels, so we had to have a pretzel, of course, in our beer book. So, we're serving the pretzels with his alt beer.
Wow, man. And yeah, then in Occidental, do you guys have a tap room, too?
Yeah, so, I mean, we're basically like, you know, similar to Commons and Gigantic, we're kind of a small production brewery, but we do have a tap room at the brewery, no food or anything, so not like a brew pub, but you can come have a beer, fill a growler, hang out, play shuffleboard, you know.
You have shuffleboard?
Yeah, we got a shuffleboard table. Didn't I tell you about that?
No.
On Craigslist.
You got a cool t-shirt, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. So Occidental, man. What, anything else about Occidental? Because
They have shuffleboard. I mean,
enough said, right? No, that's a great brewery. They had you guys had an Oktoberfest party as well. And
yeah, we just did that a couple of weekends ago. We do that every year. Close off the parking lot in front of the brewery and kind of...
Those corn cakes sound good, Andy. Mm-hmm.
I will say that cans of Occidental are really the best beer to have around when you're down in the valley shooting guns.
For sure.
For sure.
That's true. They have great, very very cool cans, cool looking. And, you know, Portland is such a food town, too, that when we started this, we were like, it was the best place to work on a book about beer and food because we had access to so many beers, local and imported beers. Beers from around the country make it to Portland as well. It's a pretty healthy bottle shop scene, too. So, and, you know, the food scene in Portland is crazy. It is super high-end right now. There's so much going on, big food festivals. So we kind of felt there was a high bar to jump over with everything, but it was a great time town for that.
Well, we're off to a great start. This is we're doing a special morning recording at Jimmy's number 43. It will be airing when you hear it. We'll be airing live at Heritage Radio Network. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Wow, we've got a special crew from Portland, Oregon in the studio tonight. Christian DiBenedetti and brought three brewers from Portland, Oregon, and his co-author, Andrea, their great new book, Beer Bites. So right now, they're probably over at the Nomad, you know, we listened to this at a special event. But right this morning, we recorded the show at Jimmy's number 43, and it's about 11:30 here, and... we're still struggling. I think it's about 8 o'clock your time, isn't it, guys?
Yeah, beer for breakfast.
We got Mike. Mike from the Commons. You know, you came out last year when we met you, and we were really psyched to get a little bit of your you know, Portland beers out here. Yeah. The Madrone and the Urban Farmhouse are really popular in Bottle, and we're really psyched to have you guys on. Tomorrow night at Jimmy's number 43, we got the Commons, Occidental, and Gigantic. It's going to be a great night. What do you guys have to say about the Commons? Because I know that your beers are kind of Belgian-y, but you're, you know, say you're using local ingredients. I mean, is what you're doing that different for Portland, or is it you're just like another one of those cool guys?
Well, I can let these guys jump in, but my take on that is maybe 5 years ago it was a little bit different, which is, I mean, how fast things evolve. But there's a number of breweries in Portland Metro doing similar things now.
Yeah, but not dedicated.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, I think the difference right there is that the Commons is really dedicated to a certain sort of kind of, call it rural continental philosophy of brewing, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
And that's different. They haven't swayed from it. That's very cool. They do a lot of neat experimental stuff, and they make beers with balance and subtlety, which is beautiful. So.
Yeah, they are great beers. One of the coolest sites.
Good job, Mike.
Thank you. The Craft Brewers Conference was recently held in Portland, which everyone was looking forward to for years. And Mike got his new location open of the Commons, like 2 days or something before CBC.
Well, yeah, we had about 8 days or something before CBC opened.
And then it was like this tsunami, tidal wave of you know, beer fans, five deep, all week long in the tap room. It was incredible. I mean, they were just slammed. But the great thing is, during that week, everyone was slammed. Everyone was hitting all the tap rooms. And that was a really fun thing to have the spotlight on Portland for a few days. But yeah, we love their beer, and you know, they're really excel with saison. So Andrea came up with this really great dish. Do you want to talk about the dish that we paired with the saison?
Sure. Yeah. So we, like you were saying, saisons pair so well with food. We found that to be by far the best food pairing beer. And one of the dishes that we pair the Commons Myrtle with is a Savoy cabbage roll that's stuffed with beef and barley, and then we made an ale cream sauce using the same beer. And the lemony tartness of the beer really contrasts the richness of the beef and the barley and those rich flavors.
I'm into Savoy cabbage stuff. That's a great dish in general. Uh-huh. And not enough people are making it, are they?
No, well, I mean, my mom used to make it.
Yeah. you got to use a Savoy cabbage.
Yeah, my mom did not make it with Savoy cabbage. That's true. We kind of fancified the classic European recipe. But yeah, when we were writing the book, we kind of wanted to give, pay homage to some of these old classic beer food recipes and then also reinvent them in a way to make them kind of more in the modern era and a little more exciting. So that was the idea there.
Do those dishes jive with you, Mike?
That sounds fantastic.
Tonight at the Nomad, we're going to be serving a raclette with his Urban Farmhouse Ale.
I do have a cheese addiction.
Yeah, so cheese and saison is an amazing pairing. You know, the funkiness of the beer and the tartness go really well with the richness of cheese. So.
How do you plan an event? So you're at the Nomad, which is kind of a fancy restaurant, hotel in Manhattan. And you guys are here with Travel Portland. But what's the event going to be like when I get there? Is it a sit-down dinner? Is it just like a walk-around tasting?
This is Travel Portland really helped us put this together as a media event. So we're going to be in a room called the Johnstone Room. There's going to be kind of stations, and then six dishes from the book will be prepared. And then each of our brewers are going to be, you know, there presenting the beers. Pretty informal, I think, you know, not like a sit-down dinner or something. We'll be walking around and trying everything and kind of just chit-chatting.
I think that's a truck outside with beer delivery. So
there we go.
This is what we do here. Well, tell us more about Mike. So the Commons, you know, we've had some of your beers, and what's your tap room like in the neighborhood that you're in? Like, I'd like to know more about Portland. I'll probably never get there.
Yeah.
I only get to travel through the radio show, so.
Right, so we are in the Central East Side District, which is basically just across the river from downtown Portland. And it has long been a light industrial area. It's definitely going through change right now. But we were really lucky. You got a cool old building on the corner of 7th and Belmont, and essentially just kind of shook the dust off of it and built out a little production space and a fun little tasting room. We tried to, as best we could, maintain a connection to the making part of it, so there are no walls. So you get to see, hear, and smell the making process, which is fun. I mean, it definitely keeps you connected to the actual process of making the beer, which, I don't know, we all find super romantic, even though it's really just manufacturing. But yeah, it's a...
Dan, what are some of your... If you go over to the Commons, you know, what would you see, or how would you describe to other people?
Well, basically, like Mike did, they moved, as we know, recently, and it's almost like they kind of scaled up the same scenario that they had previously, because the old brewery, you're basically standing in the brewery. When you're having a beer, and so it's not quite like that. I think you managed to, like, keep the customers out of your way now, but you can see into it, and it's a cool space that goes really well.
So in Portland, for your tap rooms, I mean, are most people drinking on premise, or can they walk away with growlers or cans?
Thankfully, all of those things.
Yeah.
So you can drink on premise, you can walk away with growlers, bottles, cans, whatever. That particular
draft.
Yeah, we can do dock sales there. We are privileged and have a lot of privileges to be able to sell beer direct to consumer, which is fantastic. Yeah.
And what about for other bars and restaurants? Can you sell to them also?
Yeah. The common self-distributed for 4+ years, so we did sell directly to bars and restaurants and bottle shops, et cetera, around town. We've recently partnered with a distributor who has a little more logistical expertise than we do, but but it's a great way to be able to start a small brewery.
Yeah. Christian, what are some of the one or two beer bars in Portland that have these guys, and what are some of the other breweries that you'd see on tap?
Oh, in Portland? There's great tap rooms. Apex is a great beer bar with a huge selection. Bailey's Tap Room downtown, and the Bailey's Upper Lip, I think is it called? It's like that secret bar upstairs. Those
that's
are both
secret now.
Yeah, right. Oops, we just let the secret out. But that's a great spot. I mean, they're increasingly all over the place. I like the Imperial Bottle Shop over on Southeast Division, I think it is.
Yeah.
It's a little tap room and bottle shop that's excellent. The Tin Bucket is another great place on North Williams.
So, have to mention the Horse Brass?
Of course, yeah. Right. Can't not mention the Horse Brass, a great classic bar. But,
I can't even keep track of the number of places now, especially with like the growler station places that are popping up everywhere.
Well, in the suburbs too. So
yeah.
I live out in Newburgh, and on the way out to Sherwood, there are three different growler station type bars in Sherwood, like all around the highway, like convenience stores almost.
Yeah.
They're full of people all the time. Yeah. It's great. But
So you had mentioned earlier, Christian, that there are whatever umpteen million breweries in Portland's like 90 or whatever now. Just so everybody knows, Portland has a population of about 600,000 people. Okay. The real thing about Portland is you don't even realize, I mean, there are beer bars, sure, but every bar in Portland is a beer bar. I mean, you find, if you're even remotely in central Portland, which is like inside of 82nd Avenue on the east side and any place on the west side, I mean, the shittiest bar that you can find will basically have, the draft selection will be like 8 taps and it will be Pabst and 7 craft beers. Like, period.
Well, pretty for that much, matter, yeah. The Shell gas station around the corner from us has an amazing bottle selection.
Yeah, it's Portland is completely different than anywhere else. I mean, it's just beer equals craft beer in Portland, mm-hmm. period.
That's a good point. One other thing I wanted to mention about the Commons beer from our book, since we were talking about the recipes earlier. I don't know if Mike's tried it yet, but we made, instead of a root beer float, we made a fruit beer float. With sour beer, we used our Beer Royale, which is a cassis flavored sour beer, and but it's not awesome. It's not super sour. It's like it was mid tart kind
of. It's tart, yep.
And made it into an ice cream float, basically. And so that's kind of hard to get that beer. And at first we felt really guilty, like, oh man, we're putting ice cream in, but it actually tasted incredible. So.
Is that a kettle sour beer?
It is a kettle sour beer. Yes. Yep.
So Andrew, this book is amazing. I think people should just take your book and do whole menus for beer bars.
Absolutely.
I mean, you've got everything from appetizers, soups, raclette.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really focused on foods that are party friendly, like have a group of friends over, open some really nice bottles of beer, and kind of create more of an experience with tasting beer rather than just sitting out back and drinking, which is also fun. But it's nice to have a little food to go with it. So that was
if you're listening live, you got to come. You won't be able to go to the Nomad by the time you hear this, but Wednesday, which is tomorrow night, Jimmy's number 43, it's actually our 10-year anniversary, and this is so cool that you guys happen to be coming on that same day. So we'll have the three different breweries, Gigantic, Occidental, and Commons on tap. We'll have Andrea and Christian here signing their books, and we'll have a bunch of beer-friendly snacks for everybody. So come on out. I'm pretty psyched that you guys wanted to come here. There's so many great places in New York City, Blind Tiger and Spite and Dival that seem to always get, all the special out-of-town guests. So why'd you pick Jimmy's number 43?
Oh, man, it had to be here. I love this place. I've had a lot of great birthdays here as well. So when I lived in New York for 8 years, I probably had 5 birthdays here with a big group of friends, fellow writers and stuff. And we just jammed this place up with friends and good beer. So it seemed like a natural spot to come and celebrate the book being out and get some friends together.
I love hearing about Portland. I don't get to travel that much, and that's why I love doing the show. I get to meet people from all over. So where should I have my birthday party in Portland, Oregon, At one of your tap rooms?
Sassy's.
Start early.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I know the Craft Brewers Conference was really big this year in Portland. I know like our producer Justin Kennedy was there.
Yeah.
A lot of people have great things to say about it. I mean, so Portland really is that great beer town, isn't it? You feel that way about it, Van?
No, absolutely. I mean this when I say this. I like to describe Portland as, look, we won in Portland. Like, there is no fight about craft beer versus large domestic. We won in Portland. The actual numbers are over 65% of all draft beer consumed in the city of Portland is made in Oregon. There are no major breweries in Oregon, right? It's craft. You throw in beer imported, quote-unquote, from other states as craft, you're now up to somewhere probably around 70%. Throw in Pabst, you're up to around maybe 80, 85%, and you have 85% of the draft beer market is not Miller Bud Coors in Portland, Oregon. I mean, Miller stopped advertising in Portland somewhere around the late 90s because their advertising didn't pay off. I mean, it is a completely different market than everywhere else in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
So for all you people out there who are like, my beer market's doing really great, we're growing, it's amazing scene. Bullshit, come to Portland.
what's a typical bar snack in Portland?
Wow,
that's a tough
like if you had to pick a snack to serve at you.
I have to say pretzels.
Yeah.
Ultimate really? Bar snack anywhere. Yeah, pretzels.
Soft pretzels?
Oh, soft
did you
pretzels.
See them, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see them for
them? Yeah, I see them all over.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We don't have pretzels, but maybe we're going to have to work on that. Ours is, we have like a lot of meat and cheese boards. And
yeah, I think charcuterie and cheese.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's.
You see a lot of that.
Yeah. There are a lot of locals.
Sorry, I'm just being honest.
Thanks, guys.
There should be more pretzels. A
okay,
lot
I have
more
to
pretzels.
Say, my pretzel dar is really high. I'm always looking.
Your pretzel dar.
What was the name of your pretzel book?
Pretzel Making at Home. Same publisher, Chronicle Books.
Yeah, there's a cool story about that, actually. Yeah. Andrea's book, the pretzel book, and then how we got to know Eric Asimov separately. He wrote the foreword for our book, for which we are eternally grateful. I mean, he's a huge figure in the food and wine and beverage world. And I met him at a wine conference, actually. Mm-hmm. I was actually seated next to him, and which was an amazing thing because all these winemakers from around the world, Burgundy, were coming up and kind of like, meeting royalty, being, will you please try this wine?
Yeah, New York Times wine writer. That's
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was huge. And when he writes about beer, they're very, very popular. Those columns are mega. So I got to know him then. He was really, really open to staying in touch. And, you know, I told him about the books I was doing, et cetera. And then Andrea met him around the same time, but
yeah,
a different...
Yeah, I met him when I was at a book signing at a wine event for my pretzel book, oddly. But we were seated next to each other at this book signing, and he was, like, really interested in making pretzels, bought a copy of my book, went home, and made pretzels with his son, and was, like, you know, social media all over the pretzel thing. And so we just kind of kept in touch over that as well, and it was awesome that, you know, when we were writing this book about beer and food pairing, we thought it would be great to ask him to write the foreword, since he is so knowledgeable about beverage and pairing, so
he agreed right away. He actually said one cool thing. He said, I will help you guys out on one condition, because I love your books, both of them are great, but I'm not going to do this unless this book does not snobify beer in any way. And I said, look, Eric, I promise, I truly believe if you look at the book, you're gonna agree that's not what we're trying to do. We're not trying to dumb it down either, but we want this to be accessible and fun. So we sent him the book. He agreed right away, and then wrote a foreword for us. So I think a lot that's really gonna help us. A lot of people who look up to him are gonna just give the book a second look, I think, you know. So we're really lucky to have him.
That's great, man. I'm really proud of you guys, and thanks for coming out. The guys from Portland, Oregon here at Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes. All right. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, we've got some guys and ladies here from Portland, Oregon, talking about Beer Bites, the new book, and three brewers from Oregon. And Andrea, you're the co-author of Beer Bites. What's your full name?
It's Andrea Sloniker.
And you also wrote a book about pretzels.
Yes.
So we're talking about Portland beer and beer and food pairings and all this stuff. So next we're going to talk with Van from Gigantic Brewing. I think of the trio here, I think more New Yorkers have heard of Gigantic. I know you've been in the market. We've had a few of your kegs on before.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what it was like opening a brewery in Portland and a little bit of your backstory.
Oh, geez. I've been brewing for getting close to 21 years now. I was a PhD candidate in economics back in the early 90s, and I dropped out, and I took a job at a really big brewery, Minnesota Brewing Company. We made Pete's Wicked Ale, RIP, back in the day.
When was that, though? Back in the day?
That was 1995.
Wow.
Yeah, that's when I started brewing. Then I went to a little company some people may have heard of called Rock Bottom Breweries and Restaurants. And I worked for them for like 16 years. And honestly, it was a really good company to work for a long time. But some things happened I didn't like. I shot my mouth off. I got fired. That was all in Portland. And so my business partner, Ben Love, who had been brewing at Pelican, which is a pretty darn well-known brewery out on the Oregon coast. They won a shit ton of awards at GABF and stuff. And he had moved on to Hopworks Hub, which you had last year. He was the original sort of brewer there, and he wanted to do something on his own. So we got together and we started Gigantic. And to tell you the truth, we had a real advantage in the sense that I had been brewing in the Portland market for 12 years by the time we opened up. Ben had been in the Oregon market for about 8 years by the time we opened up. So we had that advantage of sort of people knowing us already. So, you know, it was still hard.
You went hard from day one with IPAs, right?
Yeah, we're both Oregon brewers and we like hops, we'll admit it. We make a lot of other things that aren't hoppy, but, you know, we really decided that it's very funny, when Ben and I first started out, we realized very quickly that we thought about beer the same way. It's not the most common thing in the world. we realized that we liked our IPAs the exact same way, and that we really, frankly, didn't see a lot of that style of IPA in the Oregon market. We're both sort of down on bitterness, like really sort of bright, aromatic beers. And so that's what we really came to the market with. And then everything else we do is just sort of like, we just have ideas, and we're like, screw it, let's make it, you know? So we've done everything from, we made a Rauch Weizen that we really liked, a Smoked Hefeweizen. We've made a bunch of Saisons, and we make barrel-aged beers, and we've done kettle-sour beers, and we make all kinds of shit.
What's the brain damage? We're going to have that on tap tomorrow night.
So brain damage is a Belgian quad. It's, I can't remember we invented writing, so I wouldn't have to remember anything. I want to say it's like 12 or 14% alcohol. I can't remember. It's a big, big beer. The thing is, like, I don't remember because we made it, 2 years ago. And then we put it in, 75% bourbon barrels and 25% Pinot Noir barrels. And then that blended all back together. And some of that bourbon is Kentucky bourbon and some of it's Oregon. Blended back together. It's a big kind of monstrous beer with like very subtle wine notes and big bourbon notes. And there's a big hefty malt component to it. The thing is, as you make those, it's originally a real yeast-forward beer, Belgian quad, but you put it in a barrel and a lot of that ester kind of gets eaten by the wood and whatnot, so it changes a lot over time.
What made you go to Portland in the first place?
I went to college in Portland, Oregon. I went to college in Portland, met my wife there. We left Oregon and then basically spent the next 8 years trying to get back to Portland. Is that a good answer?
That's a good one.
Because that's the
truth. What about you, Mike?
I followed a girl to Portland, and then life evolved, but I stayed. Yeah.
Sounds like a song. I'm going to try to understand what this Portland is. And what about you, Dan?
You're not from
Oregon, are you?
No, I'm from Montana originally, and so Portland is kind of where you end up. Like, you can move to, if you're going to move to a city from Montana, you either move to Seattle or you move to Portland, and at least currently, Portland is still the cheaper option. So that might change.
And it's a little more comfortable for Montanans, too. It's not as big.
Yeah, yeah, it's not.
Nothing against
quite
Montanans.
It's not as big of a city as Seattle. Yeah. There's a big Montana expat community in Portland.
True, yeah.
All right. Andrew, what would you pair with some of the Gigantic beers?
Well,
gigantic, they sound really big.
Yeah, I was going to say Gigantic was a really fun one because they have such a wide range of styles, but also a lot of really big flavored beers. So one, he mentioned the quad, that one of that, one of the beers that we would pair with that, sorry, foods, is these baby back ribs that have a caramelized orange marmalade glaze on that side of them, and they're kind of braised with lots of spices, and so they have these really big flavors that stand up to a quad like that. He does IPAs, and we haven't really touched on IPA today, so that was one of the beer styles that was really difficult for us because of the bitterness. Obviously, it's a really big challenge to pair.
Yeah, IPA is like the worst food pairing.
Yeah, it was a challenge. But what we found is that foods with really high acid kind of stand up to that bitterness and kind of balance each other out quite well. So tonight at this party, we're serving also fat and sweet kind of match up with them well too. So we're serving these pork belly lettuce wraps, and the pork belly is kind of cooked with hoisin, which is this Chinese sauce that kind of has a lot of sugar and rich flavor. Yeah, exactly. So the bold flavor of that will pair really nicely with a double IPA. And then also it's topped with pickled daikon radish, carrots, kumquat. So the pickle, you know, that sour goes well with the bitterness as well.
One of my favorite styles of beer to pair with almost any food are like kind of German wheat beers. And I don't know if it... I just feel like they're so food friendly. You guys want to talk about
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. I mean, you have some spice. You've got, you know, you've got a lot of elements that work with a variety of food. So yeah, we kind of tended to start on that end of the spectrum. The number of dishes that in the book that are paired with wheat based beers is very high. Saisons and wheat beers are by far the number one. And that was kind of the wheat beer thing was pretty wild. Although we're not serving one tonight, we found that wheat beer was the only style that could pair up with tomato. Tomato is like the hardest flavor in the world to pair with beer because it's both sweet and tangy at the same time. And if it's been roasted, you have other flavors going on. So it's very confusing on the palate when you're trying to go with beer. But wheat beer amazingly works with it. So
you guys as brewers, do you think a lot about pairing with food, or you're just focused on your beers?
You know, I have to be perfectly honest, I don't think about that very much. Like, when I go, I'm also the guy that, like, I don't drink a lot of wine, but I'll drink red wine with fish, and I break all the rules. Like, I just drink what I want to drink.
Yeah.
Sometimes that doesn't work out, but usually it's okay. So, like, we'll do a lot of, and I'm sure these guys have, too, done beer dinners, you know, where you work with a chef at a restaurant, and they pick some of your beers, and they pair it with stuff, and they always like ask me like, well, what do you think we should, you know, pair with this or that, and I'm like, you know what, you guys decide, because I'm just not that guy. So I'm not saying that pairing isn't a viable thing. It's just not my not really my wheelhouse, so I leave that to the experts here.
Yeah, I pair beer with another beer.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, I'm being a smartass, but actually, as a brewer, to be perfectly honest, my concern is not at all about pairing beer with food. No offense to anybody. My concern as a brewer is making sure that the beer has what the British call Moorishness, right? It doesn't matter what kind of beer you're drinking, you should want more of it. Right?
That's pretty good.
And that to me is what I worry about.
Moorishness.
Yeah, it's more. This beer is very Moorish. It has Moorishness, right? I mean, they literally say that. And not a ton of them, you know. It's not like some chav in the street fucking lager loud saying, it's Moorish, you know. But,
Chris, you get to hang out with these guys all the time, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? I mean, even like a really big beer, even like a really crazy beer. Moorish just means, well, you know, maybe it's a 6 ounce serving, but I'll have another 6 ounce serving. It doesn't mean you need to be drinking, you know, liters of it or anything like that. It's whatever the.
I'm like, you know, there's some beers, I guess, there's the word, I can't really finish one, or I wouldn't order.
That's
kind of my test, is if I want to keep ordering it, then somehow that works. Yeah. How about you, Mike? I mean,
we don't at the Commons don't design beers with a, you know, particular meal in mind or anything like that, but we do want the beers to be food friendly, and that's really because of the way that I drink beer, which is often eating alongside. So, you know, hanging out with friends and families and other brewers, and we're eating and drinking. So we wanted to have food-friendly beers. Yeah.
Andrew, do you have any spicy food recipes in your Beer Bites book?
Yeah, we do. We do this wok-fried chili crab legs, which are really spicy. They have this amazing chili sauce on the outside of the crab legs.
And with IPA.
Yeah, that's actually paired with IPA, surprisingly. Because for the most part, I found IPA to be the kind of bitterness enhanced the spiciness to the point where it's
A lot of times I just like to drink IPA by itself.
Yeah,
almost as its own course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was it about that, though?
It was just a weird matchup of kind of the intensity, I think, of the beer flavors with the heat, kind of, you know, not canceling each other out. You know, you would sort of want to reach for a light lager or Sapporo or some, you know, super light beer. And those would kind of work, but often those grainy flavors in those beers came out too much. So something about the chili is actually kind of similar to a fruity flavor in some ways. And it was one of the big surprises of the book, for sure, was that we could take a super intense, you know, hot crab dish and pair it with an American-style IPA.
I've had some spicy dishes with sour beers, too.
Yeah,
I feel like that's a pairing that people don't talk about too much.
Yeah, I know. There is a whole chapter in here that we call Sour and Complex. You know, one of the things we didn't want to do, going back to what Eric had asked of us, is to not go too far along with rules. We're not saying to try to lay out a bunch of rules that people have to follow. Like, you have to have crab with IPA. No, we're saying this is what worked for us. Mm-hmm. And if you have fun pairing, you know, beer and food, that's the point. It's the journey. You know, go and try these things. If it doesn't work, try a different beer. If you don't personally like it, that's great, because, you know, beer is subjective as well. So we definitely didn't want to lay down the law. It was more about, let's make this fun and open it up to flavors as well. Thinking about beer in terms of flavor, so the non-initiated can think about beer that way, rather than learning styles like, what's Pilsner again? What's the difference between Pilsner and Helles beer? You know, those, we're not concerned with that. We want people to think about flavor, you know, and how it expresses in beer and how it matches with food. So
yeah, if I can say one other thing about pairing beer and food, it's honestly, I think that chefs are way more adept at it than brewers are. Mm-hmm. Like far, far, far more adept at it. We work within a frankly reasonably limited flavor spectrum. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a pretty broad flavor spectrum, but it's not even remotely what chefs can do. And chefs are so used to having to deal with bringing all kinds of flavors in and all these sorts of things. We work in one medium. It's a very specific liquid medium, and we're good at it. But chefs have to work in all kinds of media. And I mean, it's like when Dan and I are like, we just make beer. We make beer that we think tastes good. I'm frankly not capable of pairing beer and food. I'm just not. I don't know enough about how food works. I just eat it.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Like, we're sitting here listening to three brewers say, like, oh, yeah, we don't really think about the food. We just make the beer, you know. And it's kind of like you have experts here who reverse engineer, you know, what we've made to figure out, like, what to put it together with.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah.
Did we miss one, Andrea? Is there one other pairing that you want to mention?
Sure. Well, you mentioned sour ales. We should probably talk about that because that is such a, you know, hot category right now. We really love the way that, you know, sweetness and funkiness and kind of unusual flavors worked with sour ales. Cheeses go really well with them. We did, you also mentioned spicy, we did these tamarind fish sauce chicken wings, which have a good amount of heat in them, and that paired nicely, just the kind of acidity and sweetness of the wings. Kind of.
That was a Flemish Red, I think, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very sour beer.
Uh-huh.
It was unusual. Again, you would think with a spicy wing, someone's going to reach for, you know, a Japanese rice lager or something, you know, really light, but those beers didn't really do the trick, you know? And, oh, yeah, another, Andrea's handing me the book here. Probably our all-time favorite recipe in the book is mussels and celery goose cream sauce. So goose is a style of lambic, you guys know that, aged beer, wood-aged beer. So we cook the mussels and goose and then serve the goose on the side. This is, like, one of the more traditional, you know, recipes in the book. Where we're not trying to reinvent the wheel here, like let's do the classic celery, but the tartness of the beer, lemony kind of minerality, just it's insane how it works with mussels.
Yeah, the kind of the original thing about this recipe though is that we used the beer in kind of place of wine. Wine would be more, you know, those flavor profiles that you find in the acidic wine is kind of what we're going for there.
Yeah, you know, this is what we hope, you know, not a stuffy book, but it's also not dumbed down. There's no beer cheese in here. We're not like, we're not talking about cooking with beer. To me, that seems kind of gimmicky a lot of times. But there are a few dishes like this one where we did use the beer in the recipe. But in a way, you know, we're talking about reverse engineering. That was the challenge. I mean, you're taking a very complex set of food flavors with a beer with a lot of complex internal flavors going on and trying to match them. It is really tough sometimes. Mm-hmm. So that's why we wanted to, you know, deconstruct, you know, and go by flavor.
Sometimes I feel like you got to have the food dish in front of you and then sample three or four different beers to see which one really pairs with it. I mean, it's hard to put together a pairing menu, and I have a feeling that you did that.
We had a lot of fun with that. As you can imagine, it was like...
So you're saying Beer Bites, the book by Christian DiBenedetti and Andreas Sloniker, forward by Eric Asimov, our buddy. So this would be something if I wanted at home host some beer and food pairing parties. This might be a good place to start. And you guys, one more time, just gentlemen from Portland, just tell me your names and your brewery, because we're almost out of time.
Van Havik, Gigantic Brewing Company.
Yeah, I'm Mike Wright from the Commons Brewery.
And Dan Inger from Occidental Brewing Company.
All right, this has been a great show. I really appreciate it. All these guys came out from Portland, Oregon. They're here in New York City, and tomorrow night they'll be at Jimmy's Number 43. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Christian, Andrea, Mike, Van, and Dan for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Justin Kennedy and Maggie Seiden, and our engineer, Jack Kinsley. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right,
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.